Welcome to Today on Broadway for Friday, July 1st, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway star's James Marino. July 1st? Really?
That's crazy, isn't it?
What's even
crazier, James, is I heard you were hanging out on the top of the TKTS booth this morning. Literally hanging out. Yeah?
Well, you know, I was really pissed about the Trump thing.
Apparently, you were on top of the TKTS booth. Naked like a jaybird yelling about Trump. Apparently you were upset. I didn't realize you were that passionate about politics.
Oh, man. I got to learn to start these podcasts.
Yeah, well,
you got me on that one.
You let me write the scripts. You never know what's going to come up. Beyond that, yes, there was apparently some naked guy running around the top of the TKTS booth screaming something about Trump. There's video in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com in case you're interested to see what this guy actually looks like. I don't think it's James, but maybe. Who knows? On another note, congratulations to everyone over at the St. James Theater as they celebrate the 500th Broadway performance of Something Rotten today. Congratulations. And after the news about the renovations at the St. James, it sounds like they will be continuing on, hopefully for a long time into the future.
That's awesome. All right, let's get on to the news. There was one big story yesterday, wasn't there?
There was. It was a big story that kind of started and stopped and kind of started and got me to throw things and to swear profusely very loudly. But it was one big story. And that, of course, is the She Loves Me live stream. James, you and I both watched. It got off to a rather inauspicious start. As I kept getting buffering things, I kept getting error messages, and I had to reset my computer. I originally tried to watch the live stream by hooking up my laptop to my TV with an HDMI cable and plugging in speakers. It was clear very early that that wasn't going to work. Either that was network-wide issues or because I was on Wi-Fi. At your advice, I came back in and hooked up to my started watching on my desktop, which is connected via Ethernet, so it was hardwired in, and it seemed to work for the most part till about 10 minutes left in the show, where I started getting buffering issues again. But you know, this is the first time this has ever happened. I imagine there were going to be a lot of people tuning in to see this, and there were still some bugs. James, as a technology person, obviously you don't know their setup and you don't know all the issues, but can you venture a guess as to what was leading to all of these streaming issues, especially early on? Was it just so many people logging on at the same time?
It seemed to me that they were having some bandwidth issues on their end. I mean, I do technology for a living. I have some pretty solid technology that was trying to watch this show tonight, and I have fiber optics into my house, so, and very good bandwidth and a very good computer system, and I was having tons of buffering issues. So it's the internet, and it's really, really tough to isolate these things. It could be anywhere, but given that you're in Orlando and I'm in New York, and we had very similar experiences on different equipment on different ISPs, I would say the problem is over at Studio 54, somewhere in that mile. So, yeah. But like you said, it's the first time, and I thought that overall it was really, really good. I very much enjoyed it, and I think that it was, if this is where it starts and it gets better from here, you know, Broadway is gonna embrace this very much.
Yeah, speaking of us being in different places, I was talking to a friend of mine during the show, and she was at a friend's house watching it on a Roku device on her TV, and she said they did not have a single buffering or connectivity issue. So it sounds like that might be run a little differently, or it might have just been a different location, but they did not have those issues. So let us know how the quality was for you guys. For the most part, it was pretty crystal clear for me in terms of visual and audio quality. There were a few times when it was a little staticky in terms of the visual. But other than that, the quality was really great. And James, I think you and I have both kind of championed this. We both are big fans of them trying to figure out ways to do broadcasts of these natures and get them out to people that maybe aren't in the New York City area or can't afford to get up to New York to see Broadway shows. It's a great way to promote shows, especially like this one that's a limited run to larger audiences. But as I've written about, and I'm the TV and film critic at Broadway World, so I write about most of these live events that we do, whether it's on NBC or Fox. And what I've often written about the NBC ones is that they fail. The biggest failure they have is in being able to capture the scale and scope of these live performances. That was the one issue I had with She Loves Me. The performances obviously are fantastic. I'm very much on record about my undying and very deep and abiding love for Laura Benanti, and she knows that. We've talked about it. So that's not a surprise. I was a huge Chuck fan, so I love Zachary Levi. The performances were all great, like you said. However, the great thing about being in theater is being able to see the large scale, the set, everything that's going on at once. And unfortunately, I really missed that. I thought the direction of the live broadcast from the television standpoint, not the stage standpoint, felt very much like a sporting event with quick cuts, not to a Jason Bourne level of quick cuts, but still to the point where I felt like I couldn't get invested in what was going on in these ensemble scenes very much, because as soon as I saw something that was really interesting, boom, it was gone. That was especially true at the end of Act One in Romantic Atmosphere, where you had all these people doing these great dances on these little quirky character things, and you just couldn't see them because they focused on one person's face, Peter Bartlett, who I've thought was hysterical for God, pushing 30 years, watching him on One Life to Live. And, you know, I just felt like I missed that. That's the one thing that these things, whether they're live musicals or streaming or broadcast in movie theaters, miss, is that in the theater, you can pick what you want to see. You can look and focus on one person's face, or you can see the bigger picture. And you just can't do that with broadcasts like this. So if I had one complaint about this live stream, James, it would be that.
I totally agree with you. I felt that whole the cafe scene was, everything was too tight, and especially you missed some of the great choreography there because everything was so tight in the frame. And that's the time to pull it back and see what's going on that whole stage. Some of the higher angle front mezzanine type of shots, I felt, you know, didn't do the production justice. But again, I think this is a learning process, and we'll have to see what happens in the recut of this.
Yeah.
When they're, yeah, I guess it's going to be re-released with editing in a few weeks, or 6-8 weeks. What is it?
They didn't say. They said, depending on how this first cut tonight went, you'll see if they need to change something. Maybe something didn't go well from a production side. They change it out. It could be a week. It could be a month. It could be a year. Who knows? But I thought from a production standpoint, it went pretty flawlessly as far as I was concerned. I mean, the only thing that looked like it didn't go exactly according to plan was when Laura Benanti dropped some vanilla ice cream on herself, and then she picked it up with her hands and ate it. Then that was great. And, you know, like I said a second ago, and I don't want to get too creepy about it, but Laura Benanti is one of my favorite humans that I've never met in person, along with Anna Kendrick, who I mentioned last night. But it was so often we see her in these roles, whether it's in Gypsy or in Nine or any of the other stuff she's done, that even if they have some funny stuff, they don't show off her specific personality. And I think since the advent of social media, and as she's kind of gotten herself out there on Twitter and Facebook and all these quirky videos with Theater Mania and all this stuff, I feel like as theater fans, we've seen a certain side of her personality. I think we got to see that on stage for the first time, really, and see some quirks and see some neuroses. And that was a lot of fun. I mean, it was truly special to kind of see her facial reactions and the changes in her vocal inflection. That, as much as Barbara Cook was great, and who was Judy Kuhn? Did Judy Kuhn play this part in the 95 revival? I don't know if that's right.
It seems right.
I don't know if that's right or not. But anyway, I felt like she made some comedic character choices that I haven't heard made in that role before, and that was fantastic. And what was very cool about it is I can hear you typing, so you're looking it up. So thank you. I'll vamp for a while. And what was great about Zachary Levi is that you see an evolution. For me, I first knew of him on Chuck, and he played a dorky, kind of unsure of himself guy, a fish out of water. Then you see him on some other TV shows, some other movies. Then he comes to Broadway in First Date, another dorky guy, a fish out of water a little bit. And you see a little bit of that in his George as well. But you see some progression from him. I would love to next see him, because I think he's pretty good on stage. I'd love to see him do a more serious musical and show some different muscles. But I thought they were great. I thought everyone was great. Jane Krakowski was fantastic. Gavin Creel is always great. And I got to tell you, I now understand where all the love was for Nicholas Borish or Boric. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce his name. He won one of the Theater World Awards. He played Arpad. And that the beginning of Act Two with Try Me was so much fun. And him, you know, putting his ear against the door when George was talking to Marichek and falling in, he was great in that smaller role. So I think in terms of performances, it was fantastic. James, you saw this production on stage. How did it translate from what you saw at Studio 54 to what you saw on Broadway HD? Did it do it justice?
You know what? I thought that the costumes and scenery and lighting took a hit here in the translation to television. I thought that the colors were much more lush in person, and the lighting, has to be adapted for video and things like that. So I think it took a little bit of a hit, but the performances are really wonderful. And it's just as I remembered a few months ago when I saw it. I can't remember when I saw it, if it was the fall or
no. It's only been running since earlier this spring. It was one of the earlier musicals to open. Yeah. But yeah, I've seen She Loves Me Twice, two very very good college productions, and I gotta say I was a little underwhelmed and felt a little lukewarm about the first act. I don't know if I was still getting over the seething anger that was boiling up inside of me for all of the internet issues, but the first act left me a little cold. I think She Loves Me's opening number is one of the best opening numbers in all of musical theater, and I didn't get that happy feeling that I do almost every time I hear it. But I'll tell you, that second act really turned me around, and it went from being, okay, this is good, I'm missing kind of that excitement, to, okay, I'm really excited, and I'm smiling, and I'm giggling, and I'm getting, you know, goosebumps in songs, and I'm getting tears in my eyes and stuff. And so the second act really turned it around for me, and that very well could have been on me, as I'm a good, fiery Italian person. So I could have been letting my anger get to me. But I'd be interested to hear what the listeners thought. You know, if they felt the same way that I did, that the first act was a little lukewarm and then picked up in the second act, maybe they think the reverse. Maybe they thought the whole thing was lukewarm. Maybe you thought the whole thing was perfect. Let me know what you think. Either email me or James, or talk to us at Broadway Radio, or at Broadway Radio on Twitter, or me at BWWMatt at James Marino. Let us know what you thought, because I think this is somewhere where I hope Broadway and theater, whether it's off Broadway, regionally, whatever, I hope this is where it goes and we get more of it. And I hope they figure out some of these issues of scale and scope and showing people. And another thing to think about, James, is we talked to your friend who taped that Hamilton 360 thing. I wonder how that technology, I wonder how that technology comes into it, to where maybe at some point the quality will be good enough that I can say, okay, I want to zoom back on this, or I want to focus in on somebody's face at this, or I want to move and I want to focus on stage left or stage right. I wonder if at some point they'll be able to do that so that we can actually interact and address some of these issues that I talked about earlier, and we can focus on the things that we want to focus on stage. You know, if you want to focus on Cameron Adams when she's on stage, you can just stick it on her and train the camera on her so you can see what she's doing. Or our friend Andrew Kober, when he's on stage in the cafe scene, or when he's one of the carolers, you can just focus on him. I think that'll be interesting to see how this technology progresses, and I hope we get more of it. And as angry as I was at Broadway HD at the start of this, I hope they figured it out, and I hope they made a boatload of money that they can reinvest in working with other Broadway shows in the very near future.
So a couple of things about Broadway HD. I hope that they will they'll come forward and tell us if they were happy with the results. Maybe they might not give us exact financial details or how many viewers or things like that. But I guess the telltale sign is that if they schedule another one, then they were happy with this. So we'll see what happened. You mentioned your friend who had a Roku TV. It's interesting to me when the sign-up process was very confusing. The sign-up process needs to be streamlined. You could watch it on a Roku or an Apple TV, but only if you had the monthly subscription. And the monthly subscription, you had to get the yearly price, but because you couldn't watch the She Loves Me, if you just bought a month-by-month subscription, then you'd have to buy the additional thing, but you couldn't watch it on Roku or Apple TV. It's really ridiculous because my wife came to me just about an hour before the thing and says, oh, you know, my dad wants to watch it over at his house. And I was like, well, you know, is he going to watch it on a laptop? He's, you know, 85 years old. Well, how do we put it on the TV? Well, I said, you have to get an Apple TV or a Roku. And then I started to research it. And it was like, you had to spend $165 for a yearly subscription to watch it on Apple TV or a Roku. So, and you know, they'll work out all the business stuff. Is it before we didn't mention Judy Kuhn? Yes, the 1983 and 84 production. She was Amalia. Yeah,
and Boyd Gaines.
What a cast. Jonathan Friedman, Boyd Gaines, Brad Kane, Judy Kuhn, Sally Mays, Howard McGillin, Lee Wilcoff, Nick Corley, Trisha Gorman, Tina Johnson, Christy Lines, Christine, Joey McNeely, among others. What a great, great cast. I wish that the 93-94 was also captured in a public way that people can see it. A legal and public way.
Yeah, but this is such a great show, and the founders of Broadway HD before the show and during intermission talked about this really is one of the perfect musicals, and it's interesting because when you talk about the perfect musicals, people often talk about Gypsy or West Side Story or My Fair Lady or Guys and Dolls. Those are all shows that get done a lot. As great as She Loves Me is, it doesn't get done nearly as often, and I would imagine that the estates of Bach and Harnick, and obviously Harnick is still alive. But I mean, I'm hoping that this gets, you know, this stream gets more regional in college and community theaters to do She Loves Me, because obviously it's a tough show to sing. It's a tough sing, but it's such a great show. And so I hope that this helps the expansive reach of She Loves Me so that more people get to see it, more people get to do it, and more people get to experience just how great of a show it is.
Did you see the quote-unquote in-house ads for Broadway HD?
I did.
They were like, you can see Les Mis, and you can see Jesus Christ Superstar, and you can see Les Mis, and you can see Cats, and you can see Les Mis, and you can see...
They said, here's what to look forward to coming to Broadway HD this summer. Billy Elliot, Cats, Jesus Christ Superstar, Les Mis, Billy Elliot, Cats, yeah. Jesus Christ Superstar, Les Mis, Billy Elliot, Cats. Yeah, which is fine. I understand that they're building up their library, and they have a lot of other things from the UK, the BBC stuff, a lot of the NT Live stuff. They have the Imelda Staunton Gypsy that I mentioned Gypsy a second ago. They have that one that was broadcast on the BBC just last fall, I think. And that one is one that is rumored to be coming to Broadway with Roundabout. So that's something that if you are interested in seeing that production, Imelda Staunton, who won Olivier, is one of the stars of the Harry Potter series of movies, which I've never seen. You can check that one out on Broadway HD. But I hope as they build up their library, they can add more things in than Billy Elliot, Cats, Jesus Christ Superstar, and Les Mis.
Was that Constantine Morolis in Superstar?
I do not believe so. I believe this was the British cast. They did the arena tour in the UK. And I believe Tim Minchin actually played Judas. If you remember a year or two ago, I think it was 2 years ago, they were going to bring that production.
They canceled that, yeah.
Yeah, they were going to bring it here to the US and they're going to do a bunch of arenas. And then all of a sudden, no one bought tickets, so they canceled it.
Yeah. All right, we better move on to the last quick little bits before we can sign off for the week. Next up, show and casting announcements. Samuel D. Hunter's The Harvest is going to premiere at LCT3.
Yeah, yesterday LCT3 and Lincoln Center Theater announced that they would produce the world premiere of playwright Samuel D. Hunter's new play, The Harvest. Hunter wrote The Whale, which was kind of his big breakout show, and he's one of the big up-and-coming off-Broadway playwrights. The show will be directed by Davis McCollum, and it is set in the basement of a small evangelical church in southeastern Idaho. A group of young missionaries is preparing to go to the Middle East, and one of the missionaries, who recently lost his father, is planning to stay overseas and not come back to Idaho. until his estranged sister makes it her mission to keep him at home. The Harvest will star Peter Mark Kendall, Lee Carpel, Scott Jayek, Madeline Martin, Christopher Sears, Zoe Winters, and Gideon Glick, whom, as we reported yesterday, is being pursued to reprise his role in Significant Other on Broadway. The show is scheduled to run from Saturday, October 8th through Sunday, November 20th. Okay, James, we're going to wrap this up with two more stories about new musicals in the works that are a little bit unusual, to say the least. One of them makes kind of a weird sense to me, and the other is completely out of left field. Which one do you want first?
Left field.
Okay, left field. Did you ever watch the HBO vampire show True Blood?
Oh, my wife loved that show.
Okay, well, she might like this more than some of us might. I never watched the show, but I did read one of the books from the series that Charlaine Harris wrote. Apparently, director Pam McKinnon recently staged a workshop of a new musical based on the television series, based on the book series, starring Ellen Foley, Claiborne Elder, and Anne Herrada. The musical, which is said to still be in its pretty early stages, will feature a book and lyrics by YA author Elizabeth Scott, with help from Alan Ball, who was the TV show's creator. And it will also feature music from Nathan Barr, who originally scored the show for HBO. The TV show and the book series True Blood takes place in the make-believe town of Bontemps, Louisiana. I'm sure I probably should pronounce that with a French accent, but I'm done with the French stuff this week. In Bontemps, or Bontemps, supernatural creatures, namely vampires, live alongside humans. Anna Paquin starred in the TV series along with, oh, and his name is escaping me, the guy who played Captain Von Trapp in The Sound of Music Live, Stephen Myers. He played her love interest, and I believe they're married in real life, too. So this one's a little odd. We've seen some TV shows transfer into Broadway musicals, but generally they're not vampire, supernatural, sci-fi dramas. Normally, they're kind of lighthearted and fun, usually. I mean, not all of them, but most of them are.
I've not seen Broadway be kind to vampires in the last 15, 20 years or so.
That's a very good transition. I'm going to bring it back to that. Keep that vampire Broadway thing in mind. Because this next story, which actually makes a little bit of sense, I have to admit, James, that I'm a bit partial to this. This is going to sound odd and a little weird, but my favorite song of all time, I can't believe I'm going to say this in a public fashion, is Meatloaf's Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Go ahead and laugh. Get it out. It's a great song. It's a great song. Great to karaoke, too. So I was really excited when yesterday London's Daily Mail announced that the classic album that Paradise by the Dashboard Lights came from, Bat Out of Hell, was being turned into a musical. Now, obviously, Meatloaf has his roots in the Broadway stage. He was in the original Broadway production of Hair, along with Rocky Horror Show and then in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So he's no stranger to Broadway. But also his songwriter, Jim Steinman, who he's had a long collaboration with going back to their very early days. He's also written some Broadway musicals. He's written the book, music, and or lyrics for Whistle Down the Wind, Footloose, or, here it is, James, Dance of the Vampires. He's also contributed to some other musicals as well. None of those shows did all that well either, so you were right. Bat Out of Hell, the musical, is said to be a futuristic adaptation of Peter Pan and will play the Manchester Opera House before moving to the London Coliseum next summer. So I am oddly excited about this, and it makes sense because a lot of the songs that Steinman wrote for Meatloaf, these were theatrical songs. The thing about Paradise by the Dashboard Lights, it is a three-act play. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It has character. It has a story arc. And that's what I love about that song. I love about Two Out of Three Ain't Bad, the song Bat Out of Hell. It's got some really great songs. So I'm excited to see if this turns out to be something. It sounds a little bit like, I don't know, the Mr. Roboto thing that Styx did back in the day. So it seems a little weird. But I love these songs, so hopefully it works out.
You talked about it being a futuristic adaptation of Peter Pan. Peter Pan's not been so well treated by Broadway either.
Well, no, so, but Finding Neverland's running for over a year on Broadway, so that's a success by many, many standards nowadays. Maybe not like in terms of recruitment.
Actually,
yeah, but it didn't close after a month. It's playing for a year and a half, so give them a little bit of credit, James.
No, absolutely. I'm just, I feel like in the recesses of my mind, this project's been kicking around a long time. I keep hearing about the Jim Steinman project, and I'm a big fan of Bat Outta Hell. I can't tell you how many times I bought it on LP and then cassette and then CD and then CD again and then CD again. And
James, I don't know. What's LP?
That is what the hipsters here in Brooklyn do. It's where we actually have a record and some needles and things like that and play them.
You're in Long Island. You're not in Brooklyn. Don't make it sound like you're cool and in Long Island right now. Or in Brooklyn. You're in Long Island.
Well, I don't know if you know anything about geography, but Long Island and Brooklyn touch each other. Actually, Brooklyn is actually on Long Island. So,
really?
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that. Most of New York City is actually on Long Island, the physical island of Long. So the other thing that I wanted to say was, what was I going to say? Jim Steinman thing. Oh, do you know Danny Zolli? Danny Zolli's a performer.
I do not.
He's mostly made his bones on Broadway in various productions of Jesus Christ Superstar, where he's played Jesus and Judas for longer than Jesus played Jesus and things like that. But I tried to get Danny to cover For Crying Out Loud, which is from Bat Outta Hell, which can be played with a huge orchestra and a rockin' voice that Danny Zolli has. But that never came to fruition. So maybe if Bat Outta Hell ever comes to fruition, maybe Danny can come and do production. That'd be awesome. All right,
Very
Matt,
cool.
Get us out of here.
Okay, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt, and subscribe to Some Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thank you for spending your week with us, and we will talk to you on Monday. Tuesday. Monday. Are we having a show Tuesday? Monday? It's the 4th of July.
You're having a show on Monday. I believe you did a special interview specifically for the 4th of July, right?
We did. We have a special interview for the 4th of July show on Monday. So listen to that, and Matt and I will come back with headlines on Tuesday.